Run Fast, Don't Stand in the Sun, by The Lone Banff, and read by Coprime. Rating, not rated. Archive warning, no archive warnings apply. Fandom, Spider-Gwen Comics. Characters, Matt Murdock, Otomo, and The Hand. Additional tags, pre-canon, temporary deafness, just add ninjas, Earth 65, Matt Murdock is Murderdock, and canon typical bird death. Summary. The Hand has endured for centuries and spread its influence across the globe through the careful acquisition, training, and implementation of each of its operatives. And when the unpredictability of one of their own outstrips even his considerable skill, the clan has measures to control that as well. But it turns out, not even the ancient ninja death cult had accounted for Matthew Murdock. Drop it here. But sir, I said, leave it. There was a pause of mere moments, then a splash of water, quickly snatched away by the current rolling over stones smoothed by countless years. If the moon had seen fit to glance upon the landscape, the two would have seen the water run red. But she hid her face, turning away so even the rippling water was little more than ink. Shouldn't we? We follow the order we were given. Nothing more, nothing less. Every missive is a test. For whom? For us? Or for... It is not our place to know. We have done our duty, and now we return. Without a sound, the pair retreated into the woods, not leaving so much as a footprint behind before they took to the trees. No more sound than the wind slipping through branches, never once looking back. Even if they had, the darkness was too absolute to reveal anything to even their keen eyes. By the time the clouds had parted enough for the haze of starlight to hem the river with silver, the body of Matthew Murdock had washed away. It was later, much later, when Matthew stirred at last. He didn't stand, didn't push up, even though the water lapped at his brow and the sand of the riverbed pressed into his skin like shards of glass. Instead, he remained still as the dead, taking stock of his body, his surroundings, his would-be executioners. Only when he sensed he was alone, he moved his jaw, letting the river water and silt escape from behind his teeth. He pulled his head up far enough to force the dirt and gravel from his nose, wiping at his cheek with the back of one hand, biting back a scowl as the friction stung his skin. He was lightheaded, had lost a great deal of blood, that much he could remember, and being abandoned in the river overnight had made it impossible for the cuts to heal, and had left his muscles cold and sore besides. Matt had heard them coming, of course. Not a single word was uttered in the hallowed halls of the Hand that he didn't overhear. He knew there were mumblings of discontentment, not dissatisfaction with his performance or skill, but his unwillingness to adhere to the ethos of his clan. But even if he did not believe as the rest of the ninja did, he could play their game as well as any of them. Better, even. When they poisoned his food, he did not eat. When they sought to corner him in the hallways of the temple, he found new paths. When they came for him in his bed, they discovered him waiting and ready. And so Matthew managed to evade the ever-tightening grip of the Hand, day after day, night after night, between the rigors of his training. Until one day, even his vigilance was no longer enough. Weeks of denying the needs of his body, making only feeble attempts at eating and sleeping, had left him weary and slower to react. When several of their best came at him all at once, he managed to fend them off, for a time. And now he was here, feeling the water sucking at his cuts, tasting the blood and soil that still coated his tongue, and listening to. All at once, Matt pulled himself up, scrambled to his feet with the unsteadiness of a newborn foal, and strained his ears for the sound of nothing. Matthew had been born in the city, but he knew there was no such thing as true silence, not even in the woods, not for him. He stumbled forward, hands seeking out something solid in front of him to latch onto, even as the water pulled at his ankles, bidding him to return to the comforting rush of the water so it might wash his pain away. Matt wanted to shout, but denied himself even that. He satisfied himself by gasping for air, sucking in breaths that should have been as loud as wind rushing through a cavern. But though each inhalation stung his nerves and overwhelmed him with the scent of pine and sap, he could not hear them at all. His heart was pounding, a drumbeat that measured the seconds of his life, and he clawed at his chest to make sure it hadn't stopped. Sure enough, he felt it beat on, faster and faster with each passing second, so sharply behind thin layers of sinew and bone, but his ears no longer heard its song. Death. Had he said the word or merely thought it? It seemed all the same now. Matt halted at the realization, throwing his head back at last, and letting out a baleful shout that emptied his lungs, but did not penetrate the void in which he found himself. Another step forward, and he began to fall. A stray log had been in his path, unnoticed. He couldn't bring himself to raise his arms to shield his body from the ground. The ground was cold, but giving, and Matthew had little desire to do anything but lie still and wait until the world made some kind of sense to him again. He'd learned a little of meditation, only what Stick had taught him in those early days, ways to clear his mind before a battle, to take stock of the body as it healed, to take each element of what he could observe and use it to make sense of the world. The hand did not believe in meditation, but the hand had left him like this. I feel the light of the sun, weak but growing stronger as the moments pass. Dawn had been not long ago, and there were hours left in the day. The river cooled the air behind him, leaving a faint trace of damp on his skin. I smell moss, mushrooms. The great pine forest that surrounded the temple on every side for miles. Presently, he could not determine in which direction the temple lay, but Matt knew panic would do little to bring him any answers. I taste dirt. The copper of river water that seemed to soak into his every pore. A hint of sweat at his own exertion. And blood. Matt licked his lips, finding them ripped but no longer bleeding. Instead, the trickle of blood had another source, the thin rivulets having traveled from the side of his head, down his cheek, and across his tongue. A blow to the head went some way towards explaining the loss of hearing, but such an explanation was little comfort. Matt had no way of knowing if or when his hearing might be restored, even to normal levels. The thought sickened him. He doubted this was what the hand had intended. Matt had been an asset without equal since the day he joined their ranks. There was no reason to damage one of their strongest weapons. But sometimes, a weapon became too strong, too powerful, that those who created it feared the day it might come into use. A tool that could not be wielded, that could not be controlled, was of no use at all. Worse, it was a danger to those who might try. So, they'd tried to throw him away. No matter. It wasn't the first time someone had tried to dispose of him, wipe out his existence like nothing more than an unpleasant memory soon forgotten. Of course, the thing about bad memories was that they had a tendency to keep coming back, usually at the worst possible times. A thin smile flickered across Matt's lips as he drew himself to his feet. Matthew Murdock was many things, but he would not be ignored. It took an hour, perhaps two, to get his bearings. Matt knew the Hand's training grounds were to the east of the river, in land unmarked on any map. He stood with his back to the sun, focusing on the way its heat moved minutely over his skin as it pushed ever westward, bidding him farewell as he turned himself away from its rays. The temple lay to the east, but making the journey would be no easy task. While all of Matt's senses were heightened to a degree that not even his masters fully grasped, he was most reliant on his keen sense of hearing to make his way through the world. Without it, his understanding of his surroundings was woefully incomplete. But Matt had learned to navigate the world after the loss of one sense. He could compensate in the absence of another. For a time, he stood absolutely still, letting his remaining three senses fill the void. The scent and flavor of the air told him where he was, but not which way he was meant to go. For that, he had to dig deeper. Bare feet and muddy ground. His toes curled and dug furrows of soil as he felt out the shadow of every rock, every root, every crawling thing that moved beneath him. Matt was accustomed to using his hands to seek out information. Each brush of his fingers was as precise as the cut of a scalpel, but constantly bending over to feel out the path would only waste his time. So instead, he stood silently, feeling out everything the earth had to tell him. Eventually, he found what he was looking for, the constant rush of the water to his back. Even though he was unable to hear its coursing waters, he could now keep track of its location, making sure he didn't backtrack, or worse, end up in endless circles in the woods. At last, he was ready to take his first steps. As much as he may have wanted to, Matt forced himself not to hurry. His return was surely not expected, but each hour that passed before his return was an hour his masters breathed easier, imagining they'd rid themselves of the foreign pest once and for all. He would let them taste satisfaction before ripping it from their mouths. Besides, he needed to keep his pace steady if he wanted to keep track of his own movement. Once he was among the trees, the heat of the waning sun became harder and harder to find, leaving only the fading churn of the river to usher him onward. He tripped more than once, but the second time a pile of branches broke his fall. Matt wasn't generally afforded much in the way of accommodations while serving the Hand, but he still knew how to use a cane to help guide himself, and quickly busied his hands stripping the needles from a sap-covered branch that still had some give. As he worked, he wondered why he'd been left alive. Perhaps the ones who had thrown him in the water had hoped it would wash him out to sea. Surely they'd assumed he was dead, though that level of carelessness did not speak of a long career with the Hand. After he'd been subdued, it would have been easiest to cut his throat and make sure the deed was done, but the Hand had strange ideas about death and what happened after. There was, of course, the possibility that this was some kind of test, but that seemed unlikely. Matt had already exceeded all but the clan's most senior members, and even they spoke of him in concerned tones, not realizing he could hear every word. He wondered what they would say when he returned. As the distance between Matt and the river grew, his pace slowed, steps growing more cautious as the vibrations of the water became more difficult to detect. Soon, they would vanish from the sphere of his senses entirely, and he would need a new method of finding his way. Using his walking stick to seek out the base of a tree, Matt cleared the ground of the worst of the stones and brush before sitting and taking a moment to think. Matt's considerable senses couldn't tell him the phase of the moon, but as he rubbed away the last of the damp from his skin in the frigid night air, he liked to imagine it was a new moon that looked down on the land, blanketing it in the same solitary darkness he found himself in now. A slim smile graced his lips as he realized he wasn't alone. A faint flutter of air at his fingertips, followed by another near his head. In one sweeping motion, Matt raised his cane and cast it through the air, swiftly drawing himself up to his feet. Still, this did not dissuade whatever man or beast had found him vulnerable in the night. baring his teeth, Matt let forth a guttural cry, more rage than words, arcing his stick through the air over and over, not bothering to pause as something sharp cut at his fingers and scratched his face. He couldn't hear the heartbeats of his attacker, or perhaps there were several. The razor-quick blows came from every direction, and he had to freeze and focus, letting the sharp jabs strike him over and over, until he struck out one more time, making contact at last. Something fell to the ground, solid and without grace, but curiously light. After tapping it once with his cane, Matt bent down to feel out the twitching form of the demon that had been set upon him. A bird. A crow, he imagined, from the size of it. Likely attracted to the scent of blood still clinging to his skin and the stillness of his form in meditation. The beast had been looking for an easy meal and mistaken Matt for dead. "Not yet," Matt whispered, unsure if he'd made any sound at all. "Fuck you, not yet." There was still much he had to prove. By the time Matt caught the scent of the temple's incense in the air, the heat of the sun had revealed itself again. Now that he could pinpoint his destination, it was tempting to rush forward, to push himself over the stone walls and into the grounds, fists raised, teeth bared. Still, he forced himself to bide his time. Matt was no stranger to operating in the shadows, but announcing his return in the broad daylight would only mean giving the hand more of a warning, and as he was still adjusting to the hearing loss, Matt wanted to give himself every possible advantage. Moving slowly, he soon found himself near where the edge of the tree line gave way to the temple grounds. It took some doing, but Matt made his way up into the branches of a sturdy oak, with branches dense enough to provide him some cover while he surveyed the temple. Only yesterday, it would have taken no effort at all to hear every person in its halls. From further away than he sat now, he could have made out each draw of a blade, strike of a match, every secret whispered in hidden corners. But now, even as oak leaves brushed against his skin and the boughs swayed ever so slightly with the wind, Matt could make out no sound at all. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he knew he had to confront the possibility that the damage was permanent. The blow he'd sustained had been meant to incapacitate, if not outright kill him. Whoever had given the order had clearly decided that his death was an acceptable loss, which meant they had no investment at all in his ability to recover. Not once in his short life had Matthew ever been thrown away. Thin hands twisted around his makeshift cane as he grit his teeth, hunching over and coiling in on himself as he extended his remaining senses as far as he could. Even like this, he could be just as effective, better, than any agent of the hand. This was his chance to prove that once and for all. Matt would be more than they expected, more than they ever believed he could be. He could extend himself beyond the limitations of the body he inhabited. Even now, he felt himself becoming part of the tree in which he was perched, feeling every slow twist of the ancient wood as though it was his arms that were swaying in the wind. Dappled dots of warmth blossomed in his hair as they did on the leaves that spread themselves to the sun. And his feet? His feet were the very roots of the oak, reaching deep into the soil, feeling the passage of everything that crawled and burrowed, every falling acorn and snapped twig, and every footfall of a ninja searching the grounds on their patrol. Like this, Matt could sense them easily. Members of the hand could control their breathing, even their heartbeat, but not one had yet managed to overcome the natural law of gravity. Even their lightest steps were broadcast clearly in his mind as he curled his toes around the branch. He knew the path of patrol well, having run it several times himself, and as he felt the steps drawing closer to his hiding spot, the first flames of a new plan began to flicker in his mind. Yes, it could be done, and it would be so easy. Matt would show the hand what they refused to see. The temple gates swung open at a ponderous pace, wearing the groove in the dirt beneath their path even deeper. The sun had dipped below the horizon, leaving only torchlight to gild the edges of the layers of lacquer and wood. Four ninja deftly slipped inside as their replacements vanished into the woods without a word. Within the walls of the temple, a courtyard training session was drawing to a close. Endless rows of red-suited warriors performing chains of attacks against imaginary foes. Before them stood their master, casting a watchful eye over the display so that he might discipline those guilty of any slight misstep. The lesson ended without the need for such an intervention, but also without a word of praise. When the leader was satisfied, he dismissed them all with a wave of his hand, and with a flutter of robes, the crowd vanished within seconds. Finally, he turned his attention to the four remaining ninja. Anything to report? Nothing, sir. A quiet day leading to what looks like a quiet evening. The man cast his eyes at the other three. I would not be so sure, but you have performed your duty as instructed. You may retire. He swept two fingers through the air, turning away as the group left to seek out a brief meal before finally resting for the evening. You seem uneasy, Master Muto. Perhaps I am, Otomo, but only because I am unaccustomed to questioning my decisions. Because you fear you may have chosen incorrectly? Because I believe there are those who will not accept my judgment so easily. Before Otomo could utter a syllable of his assent, a rustle of fabric caught their attention. One of the four returning patrolmen, the only one remaining after the night's report. What is it? Muto snapped, eager to put the unease of the evening behind him. You and the others have been dismissed. Unless you discovered something to report you did not wish the others to hear? The ninja gave a quick bow, straight back and low, obscuring the uncovered sliver of his masked face from view. Otomo tensed. Master Muto. But it was too late. Without waiting to be addressed a second time, the young ninja sprung into the air, closed the gap between himself and Muto with a single leap. The ninja master was just as quick to respond, pulling a thin blade from the folds of his robe, without a sound, and pressing it into the side of his attacker, even as the two of them fell against the wall. Warm, slick blood seeped out against his fingers, but Muto hesitated to push it deeper, partially out of curiosity, but also because the rogue ninja had his own knife digging into his ribs, as well as a hand wrapped firmly around his throat. One, or perhaps both of them, might die here tonight, but at the very least, Muto would have some answers. Without a word, he reached up and pulled the hood of his assailant back, utterly unsurprised to find himself staring deeply into empty eyes. So, you survived. Matt growled, and his grip tightened against Muto's throat, but his fingers did not move to crush or choke. Instead, they slid against the rough skin of his mentor, until finally finding a resting place against his throat and jaw. Why? The syllable was more growl than word. For a moment, Muto hesitated to respond. It was a question he'd wrestled with even before the decision had been made. A test, he said at last. A measurement of capabilities against extremes. The answer earned him only bared teeth and a second sting of sharpened steel against his side, and for several heady seconds, Muto thought Matt might refuse his answer, insist it was a lie. But no such accusation came. Instead, Matt was motionless, except for his unseeing eyes, which darted from side to side, as though seeking out a truth they would never find. At last he relented, pulling away from Muto and straightening to his full height. I hope you learned everything you needed to know, he said at last. Indeed. Muto stepped away from the wall, sweeping his arm broadly in the direction the rest of the clan had gone. Go. Clean yourself up. Find your quarters. It took another 2 seconds for Matt to move, but for now, at least, he seemed content to follow Muto's order. In a flash of linen and shadow, he was gone. "Master Muto," Otomo spoke softly, once they were alone, "I am ashamed I did not realize. I should have accounted for the possibility Murdoch might." "How old is the boy now?" Muto tucked his knife away, but paused to examine the red that stained his hand as he pulled it back. 17. The hand were adept at many things. Information was but one of them. 18 in the fall. The blood grew sticky between Muto's fingers, but he made no move to wipe it away. "I think perhaps young Murdoch has learned all that he can from us here, don't you?" "Do you mean to make a second attempt?" "I'm not a fool," Muto snapped. "I know a demon like that would claw its way back from hell itself given just cause." He blew out a breath, brushing the back of his hand against his lips as he stared at the moonless sky. "But just because we cannot tame the devil does not mean it cannot be of use to us." "Sir?" "Send word to our associates in America. I have a proposition that they will need to accept." With a single flick of his wrist, Muto produced a silken cord from his belt. With a second, it unraveled into a fine cloth, which he used to wipe his hands clean. Otomo bowed. "Of course, Master Muto, I understand." "Good," Muto nodded. "Because you're going with him." The spring water bit at every one of the cuts on Matt's hands, sharply enough that the pain alone mapped the shape of his fingers and how they flexed in the water. Though there were still streaks of blood staining his face, Matt made no move to wash them away. Instead, remaining still with his hands submerged, letting the ripples in the water tell him everything they knew about the movement within the temple. It was late now, the majority of the recruits retiring to make the most of their meager hours of rest, while others departed afield on missions, and a scant few patrolled the grounds. The Hand were never truly at rest, and that was perhaps the one trait Matt felt he shared with the organization. Right now, it was something he could use. The water told him some of what was happening on the grounds, but still took a great deal of concentration to make sense of the information, just as it had when he'd wrapped his hands around Muto's neck. Each vibration and click of the man's throat had broadcast information, but had taken time for Matt to parse it into words he could understand. Ultimately, not ideal, but he could get better given time. The ground told him another story. With his bare feet planted against the stone, Matt could feel out the movements in each room, each hallway, even the secret passages ninja of his station were not meant to know about. He could feel the steps lessen as others went to bed, and the methodical pace of those on patrol. Only when Matt could feel that he was not in danger of being disturbed did he finally disrobe and begin to wipe away the evidence of the last 2 days. By the time he was done, the others in his shared quarters were asleep. The deep tremble in the air as he entered the room spoke of exhausted slumber, and snores that he was almost thankful he would not have to hear. Even though his head still ached from the blow he'd received before he'd been dumped in the water, Matt was confident he had made it to his corner without a sound, and settled in for whatever rest he might manage to claim. Some hours later, Matt awoke with a start, teeth snapping at the frigid air as the voice of a distant bird pierced the air, announcing itself proudly as it ushered in the cacophony of the woods. "Fucking bird," Matt spat out, pulling at the roots of his hair and settling back against the wall before sitting upright all at once. The wind in the trees, the river miles to the west, the overlapping heartbeats of everybody within the temple. The whine of blades being sharpened, the scratching of ink on the page, whispers of plans yet to be carried out. Matt hummed to himself, tracing the path of vibration from his throat to the shell of his ear, as though he sought to pluck the sound from the air before swallowing it again. The ache in his skull had subsided, but the memory of the test, as Muto had called it, would not fade any time soon. "Capability against extremes," he mumbled to himself, settling back against the wall with a satisfied smile. "And how did you find I measured up, I wonder?" Matt let his head tip forward as he let his mind wander and his senses stretch themselves lazily around himself. Each breath, footstep, and word overlapped into a rhythm that would never be home, but was at least familiar to ease him into a meditative state. He'd earned a measure of rest, so he allowed himself to sleep a little longer and dreamt of the city. The end. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this work, please consider leaving a comment on the original work or the author.